On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Okay, everybody, before we get started, I wanted to let you know that this is a two-part interview with Bob Alejo. Part one, we discuss his career in strength and conditioning, both present and past. And in part two, we discuss training and training protocols. I think you're going to like both parts, as there's valuable information in both. With that being said, I hope you enjoy part one. And if you do, make sure to give part two a listen later on. All right, everybody, I'm here with Bob Alejo. Bob, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
My name is Bob Alejo. I've been a strength coach for about 35 years and fortunate to be called by Chris Messina to do a little baseball thing. I spent some time in baseball as a strength coach of the A's twice, and it was a great time through the whole Moneyball thing, legitimately. Even though we couldn't get Antonio Banderas to play me in the movie, they ended up not putting me in there. So I was a little bit bummed out about that. Here I am, and happy to be with you, Chris.
All right, so you've been all over baseball, college, Olympic athletes. Tell us about your current role, and then we'll kind of get into the baseball side of stuff.
Okay, well, right now I'm the director of sports science for powerlift, weightlifting equipment. Which I think most of the listeners know of, cages, racks, high heavy duty exercise machines and bars and everything else. And so what I'm doing now is just kind of getting the word out, really using my experience, my background, my connections in the scientific world, which I got great support and friends in that area that have helped me along very, very much. I'm a big proponent of following the science. At the same time, you know, being on the floor and in the gym, I'm able to apply that science and see if it works or not. And usually it does. So that's the good news about it. So I'm on Twitter at Coach Alejo, Coach_Alejo. And then I also post on Powerlift, which is at Power_Lift. And my awesome Facebook posts on the Powerlift and my page. So just putting out science, Chris. What's happening out there, some of my experiences, some of the things I've done, and then trying to promote the field, trying to get our stronghold a little bit better on what we do and the seat that we have at the table for decision making in the performance area. It's not respected enough, and frankly, you know, some of that's our fault, but that being said, it's still something I'm very passionate about, getting us to where we should be in terms of decision making. And so it's just really me sort of helping to get the word out about powerlifting, but I think most people know about their equipment by virtue of me just, you know, speaking, presenting, publishing and doing social media and just on training. I think it's a service that Powerlift offers through me that no other equipment company or tech company offers.
That's great, man. That's great. Yeah, I follow you on Twitter, and I've seen some of your stuff, and it sparks a lot of discussion. Which, at the end of the day, I think is kind of the goal, anyways. Get strength coaches talking. So,
oh, absolutely, man. You got to create high level thought. I mean, it's something that you've got to do. You just can't take things for granted. I mean, even the science. You know, I mean, it's any scientist will tell you that there's really nothing conclusive. It's not 100% sure, but you can be certain that you're moving towards certainty in terms of programming and testing and analysis and those sort of things. So I really like the idea that I want to start people thinking even stronger about what they believe, or thinking stronger about not believing that anymore based on the science, what's out there.
For sure, man. That's great. And I think this episode is going to kind of get into some things that are going to get people thinking. So before we go too far, let's talk about your baseball experience first. You were with the A's on two separate occasions. So kind of
Yeah.
compare and contrast those for me. I know the first one started back in the 90s, and there weren't a ton of strength coaches in baseball back then versus maybe your second time there were. So kind of compare and contrast those for me, if you would.
Well, when I first got in, Chris, 1993, I think only half the teams in baseball had strength coaches at the big league level, which would tell you or imply accurately that there wasn't much going on at the minor league level. They didn't have a lot of guys like you out there, which at the time we all believed in. And so that being said, I guess the best way to kind of put it in a picture frame, we had our very first PBS CCS meeting, which myself, Fernando Montes, who was with the Indians, and Steve Odgers, who was with the White Sox, us three kind of created this group in 90, I want to say 94 or 5, somewhere in there. And so we met at the Disneyland Hotel, and our very first meeting had eight people at it. It was eight people, a white grease board, and a cooler full of beer. And we just made every single guy go up and write something about their program. So yeah, it was really a great beginning for all of us, opening up new avenues for guys to get hired, and also trying to break down some of the old things that baseball was, and still in some instances, who's trying to fight, weightlifting for baseball. Are you kidding? My hat's off there to Sandy Alderson, who's now the GM of the Mets, and of course was the vice president of baseball and was the president and general manager for us in the A's. He thought that it was a special craft and that they needed a pro to come in and do that, somebody who did that for a living. And I think he is as much responsible for a lot of positions that we have in baseball as anybody. And then Billy Beane certainly made that proliferate a little bit by giving me all the backing that I had earned, and the trust that he put in me there. So, that was the first thing. And so it was really fertile ground. I mean, it was just, let's see if we can do this collectively and separately. So as time went on, Chris, we kind of, we developed the PBS CCS, and then, along those lines, the rules, the guidelines, the bylaws, the dues, all the meetings, all these things. And then at some point, it grew to the fact that then we started getting the NSCA involved. We teamed with them to do the RSC. So we got that. And then I was able to do an NSCA. And then couple that January meeting, which was football specific, and turn it into football baseball specific in January. And then, we in Tennessee, where we doubled the attendance from the previous year just by having baseball on it and then having pro baseball coaches speak at it. So it was really a very formulative time of what we were trying to accomplish. And it was a slow process. There was a lot of things that weren't easy, especially on teams that didn't have strength coaches. They didn't have them because they didn't believe in them. So, we had to kind of fight that down a little bit by virtue of what we were doing on the teams that we were employed on who believed in them. And so it just grew. I mean, in my own special instance with the A's, of course, that was a whole different sort of microcosm, because then that ended up being Moneyball at some point. So I was able to, like I was talking, earlier before we got on, that we almost lost 100 games twice in that 9 year span until we end up getting really good and moving on into the playoff situation and having an impact. And then that 1 year, the 2001 or 2001, where we probably had That probably had the best, second half September for sure in the modern era. So that was a real interesting time. And so, you know, it was just really cultivating the right atmosphere so that people would train. And it was a slow process. And, you know, as a coach, you have to be careful about not doing too much. And I, you know, you got to remember now, I already coached at UCLA for 10 years before I got there. So I already came with a certain amount of credibility. It wasn't like I was, you know, a former baseball player, which I was, who just was now going to coach baseball athletes. So, you know, I had that a little bit. And of course, I had Tony La Russa as my manager. And, you know, Skipper was great to me, that staff, as he, you know, his career, he's, you know, a Hall of Fame career, of course, and was a great mentor for me about handling athletes and handling men, handling adults. And so, you know, once you get co-signed by somebody like that, he was the one that put me in uniform. So I think, you know, at some point I was, you know, be the first to go in uniform to have a number and a name on my back. He went to the league office. He went to the commissioner's office to get that okay. Because he said, you know, you're catching in the bullpen. You're doing all these other things. But he never thrown batting practice too, which now I don't think you can do that anymore. But he, you know, he never made that part of the whole job. Like I could, anytime he said, anytime you want to stop doing that, you let me know. Because I know what your job is. So we end up, you know, put me in uniform, which I still have those uniforms in my closet. I mean, I've never, as a former baseball player, as a young person, you know, and all the way through college, I'll never take for granted what it's like to have a big league uniform on my back. So he, you know, he really very much, you know, integrated me into the fabric of the team, let alone the game. And all of a sudden, that, I think that was very helpful at the time. There was also some guys at the time who were doing, you know, hitting fungos and BP and all that stuff that really weren't doing as much for the profession as they were for themselves doing all that stuff. I think in my instance, I absolutely think it helped me get in to the fabric of our team by doing all those things. It felt like you were with them, you know? And so I've always felt that way. And of course, as time went on, Tony leaves, Art Howe takes over, the dynamic changes, and again, the support was unbelievable. In fact, I was talking to somebody the other day. I told him, I said, I can't remember one time, not once, in those 9 years that anybody in the administration questioned what I was doing, told me to stop doing something. Never. No manager, no, especially Billy and those guys. Not one time it told me. And so it was a great opportunity for me or for anybody to see if you're any good or not. You know, who wants to do a program that's not yours and then be told that you're not very good? Doesn't make any sense. So it was, you know, it was a magical time in almost every aspect that I can think of. The second time back was a little different. So, you know, I'd left. I went with Jason Giambi to the Yankees as an employee under his business. It was gone for 4 years, and I thought that was a good idea for me, because I end up writing a book called Double Play, which is training and nutrition for baseball. I still think it's the best publication out there. It's not in reprint at all, so it's hard to find. But I wrote it with Dr. Jose Antonio, who later founded the ISSN. He's been a great, great source of information, and his posse in terms of sports nutrition. If you're really interested in sports nutrition and you want to know how that actually works, ISSN is the place to go. There is, I mean, these guys are scientists. Many of them are CSCS. Many of them are coaching. They train themselves, but they're also PhD exercise physiologists and experts in nutrition. That's where you want to go. There is no other place, I promise you. So I wrote the book, got a website, lived in Manhattan. It was pretty damn good. But then I realized I needed to get back at them. So I came back to the college athletics at Santa Barbara. And 4 years after that, I got a call from Billy again and wanted to know if I'd be interested in coming back. And of course I was. You know, I thought, yeah, this is a great challenge, because he explained to me what had happened in the meantime, injuries, not doing so well and all that. And I felt like those are the kind of things I really like. So I went back, and I think what really wasn't the same, Chris, was it wasn't starting over in 1993. It wasn't Moneyball. It wasn't, you know, Tony La Russa. It wasn't, I mean, there was, it wasn't many things. So it was not what it was, it what it wasn't for me. It's almost like, you know, when you have a great dream and you wake up in the middle of it, you try to fall back asleep and see if you can't catch it up again. Like, right. It's just, you just can't do it. And so that, for me, that was, that's what was different. I think there was more personal trainers involved in the game at the time. And so you had less access to the players, and in many instances, less influence on the physicality of it. You know, by the time they come to you, I mean, you have, you know, 6 weeks of spring training to change their physical profile, which is absurd. And then, you know, there was nothing in place to say, hey, you can't go do that private trainer, right? So that's what was different about it. And personally, it was different for me. I got remarried, and I just, you know, I just wasn't the same. I mean, just in totality, the whole thing wasn't the same. But I can't think of anything training wise that changed, right? So the difference wasn't the structure at the top. I still, again, I felt like the first time I was there with the A's, I had the best job in baseball. I'd argue until, you know, we were on the ground rolling around wrestling that I have the best job in baseball. Second time I went back, I had the best job in baseball again, because the structure at the top was still the same. Billy was up there. I had my place. I will say this, and this was something that was important to me, and I felt like it was important for the profession in baseball. When I went back, I told Billy, I don't want to be the head strength coach. I want to be the director of strength and conditioning, and here's why. Because there's a director of player personnel. There's a director of Latin American. There's a director of, you know, player development. There's, you know, so I wanted to be in line with all of them, and that's important. I know a lot of people think it's not. I promise you, when the meetings had, oh, he's the head strength coach, it doesn't sound the same. And so you're not going to be looked at the same. So I wanted to be the director of strength and conditioning to be in line with the titles that already existed in baseball and nearly every other club. And he said, sure. And so the interesting part of that kind of supported my thought, because when he went to go do that, there was no, in the drop-down window on the non-uniform personnel list, there was no title director of strength and conditioning, none. So he had to go to the league office to get it okayed, to get it put in there. So, I mean, that again told me that, you know, our rightful place had not been co-signed yet, you know, and so now it's in there. So if you want to be director of strength and conditioning, you can jump on there. And I really urge most coaches to do that. I think that's the place you need to be. And I also told Billy, I want to report directly to you. And he said, well, you kind of do already. I said, no, I know we did that before, but in the contract, I want to report directly to you. So I don't have to deal with a pitching coach, a manager, nobody but you. And he said, yeah, that's a no brainer. So these small things are something you learn when you get older. And when you got to pay it forward, which I believe I'm responsible to do, you've got to do it that way. So I think those were the things that I changed for the better. Going backwards, there's no way Tony La Russa was going to let anybody impugn my integrity and what my job was. He was never going to let that happen. So you come up, and it was all new. So there really wasn't any fear of anything bad happening. So I think the difference was just really this special time in baseball, building this model of strength and conditioning along with my colleagues in the game, which then began to grow a little bit. And then coming back just later that the structure had changed a little bit, not for me at my team at that level, but I think at other places it had, where you had less input because the money got bigger. I think money influences a lot of decisions, especially with strength and conditioning, how much you're going to do with so-and-so, and that, hey, so-and-so makes a lot of money. He likes his guy in wherever the hell he trains, right? That just denigrates the model. For us, I say, if you don't like what I'm doing, then you need to fire me. Get somebody else. Don't say, okay, you got to train this guy. Hey, Chris, you need to work out with Bob, but Joe, you don't, because you have a guy out there, which means you have a lot of money. We care about you more, so you go do that. I think that happens more than that people think, and it's probably the worst kept secret in the game, I would imagine. So that's kind of a long-winded approach to what I did the two times with the A's.
Well, there's a lot of good stuff. First of all, I didn't know you were in uniform, which is really, really cool. And then secondly, more importantly, you know, thank you for everything that you've done for the field. Obviously, it's come a long way since eight people at a PBS CCS meeting. So I have to, I got to at least say thank you for that. All right, everybody, that concludes part one of our episode with Bob. This is a good place to leave off as we transition into part two, which includes training protocols and a recent article that Bob wrote. Bob is one of the pioneers in this field and has helped us build this field into what it is today. We owe Bob a lot, and hopefully you enjoyed part one. And if you did, be sure to give part two a listen. We'll talk to you again soon.